Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and it's time for some trash talk. In 2015, SpaceX launched the Falcon 9 satellite, but it didn't have enough fuel for the return trip. So its chaotic orbit is going to come to an end when it crashes into the moon. That's going to happen in just a matter of weeks. Also in 2019, an Israel Aerospace Industries spacecraft crash-landed on the moon. And when it did, thousands of microscopic animals became accidental lunar inhabitants. I know, I was like, wait, what? There are, in fact, more than 27,000 pieces of junk currently orbiting the Earth. And that's just the big chunks of trash that the Department of Defense Global Space Surveillance Network is currently tracking. Small bits of junk like paint chips or nuts and bolts that are too small to track, they're up there too. And the number of satellites in space is only increasing. Companies like Amazon, SpaceX, and OneWeb plan to send more and more satellites into space, creating what's known as mega constellation satellites, all reflecting light and obscuring our vision into space. Apparently, polluting the Earth just wasn't good enough. Now we're making the solar system a dumping ground. And well, that's just trashy. Maura Bajaw is associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin and scientific advisor for Privateer, an aerospace company. Welcome to The Takeaway, Morba.
Salutations.
What in the world? I'm sorry, we're just sending satellites into space without enough fuel to get back and knowing that we're just trashing up the actual solar system.
That's exactly right, Melissa. I mean, look, we started launching stuff in 1957 with Sputnik. That was in 57. Now in 2022, we have about 4,000 working satellites, but like you said, we track, you know, tens of thousands of things going down in size all the way to a cell phone. And the smaller stuff is just unknown, kind of like, you know, random bullets. And most of the stuff that we send up there doesn't come back. And we just keep on sending more and more into these orbital highways as they were.
All right. So when is the SpaceX Falcon 9 supposed to, and I just can't believe I'm saying this, smack into the moon?
I'm thinking it's probably around March 4th is when I've seen these predictions. But I have to say, in 2019, there were four things that slammed into the moon. One of them was done on purpose.
What effect does that have on the moon?
I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is that our moon, because of these single events, each event in and of itself isn't, I don't know, I don't even want to say it's not horrible. Because the thing that I think about is I think about cruise liners on the oceans, and what is the effect of any given cruise ship, you know, dumping all of its garbage into the ocean? Like, that's not cool. And maybe one cruise ship doing it doesn't pollute all the oceans of the planet, but you can see that that doesn't scale well.
Right. So it's not like SpaceX Falcon 9 is going to crash into the moon and create tidal waves on Earth. But if 1,000 or 1,000,000 of them, right, which could happen over time, those changes, then that could have a real effect on. I mean, the moon is, it is affected by things smashing into it.
Well, I would say this, right? It's like the way we are doing space exploration is not very different than how we've explored land, ocean, where it's to the detriment of the environment. And so we are polluting the moon for real. All the stuff that we sent there from the Apollo missions that we Americans call monuments, you know, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and all these buggies, all that stuff is trash. We're doing the same stuff to Mars too. You know, it's like all these things that we're sending to Mars and heat shields broken and scattered across the Martian surface. It's like our way of exploring is to litter. And that just needs to change.
Okay, so as we were kind of talking about this problem, you know, we had at least one producer kind of, you know, trying to play the advocate on the other side who said, well, it seems like there's a lot of room in space. There aren't, as far as we can tell, you know, there aren't sentient beings out there. And so, you know, given that we do have a pollution problem here, you know, on Earth, maybe this is not such a bad thing.
Yeah, look, I would say that even though all of outer space might be infinite, near Earth space where we put our satellites is finite. just like we have highways on Earth and we have airways for aircraft and even, you know, maritime ways for ships, we have orbital highways, and these are becoming, you know, more and more congested. And let me put it this way to you, Melissa. So we've seen people with resources, billionaires and whatnot, going up in the space, you know, Jeff Bezos and so on and so forth. And a lot of people are thinking to themselves, well, you know, hopefully one day I could afford a ticket and I could become a space tourist. But here's the difference. It's not like getting on a plane, because imagine this. Imagine if you and I, we both get on a plane. Let's say we're going to go to Paris together to chill out and talk about space debris on the way.
Yes, this sounds fun.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, I say, well, if you have a pressure change, you're going to see some mass come out. Water landing, there's the vest. And oh, by the way, there are random bullets that we can't predict that might pierce the aircraft on the way. Have a safe flight. I don't want to get on that plane. But that's what people going into space face, is that reality that we can't predict how this trash is going to interact. And, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's when humans are going to perish as a consequence of space tourism because of all this piece of, you know, debris that's in Earth orbit.
So this is so helpful. You know, you made this, you know, similar example to kind of westward expansion, if we just were to keep it in a U.S. context rather than a global, right? So just in a U.S. context, to think about that notion of westward expansion and manifest destiny, and that the notion that, oh, there's plenty of land and space out there, ignoring that indigenous people were already there, right? This idea that there's no one there. And so we can go, right? We could just go out and do whatever we want in that space. But now the consequences of that, the environmental degradation, the human degradation that has come as a result of that worldview 150, 200 years ago is extraordinarily important to our whole globe.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, what I would say is this, right? I would say that this idea of just utilizing the resources as if we own them versus being stewards is the big difference. Indigenous people, they understand themselves as stewards of the environment and they behave as such. But when we believe, hey, you know, I'm going to do it because I can, it tends to be to the detriment of the environment and then everybody else, you know, writ large.
Talk to me about light pollution. How is light pollution wrapped up with all of this?
Yeah, so I would say this. Each one of these objects, when they're orbiting the Earth, they're reflecting light towards the Earth. And this is something that you can see more during twilight. So dawn and dusk is when you can see this stuff more. And in fact, you know, my career started off as a security guard guarding nukes in Montana. And that's how I got interested in satellites, because I could see these things with my naked eye. But now astronomers around the globe, they have huge pieces of glass and telescopes, and they're trying to see very dim things. And unfortunately, they have more and more things that are made by humans reflecting light towards their telescopes. So they have to pierce through all this clutter just to get to some science. And the story's not going to get better.
Moriba Ja has an absolutely fascinating backstory back there that you're going to have to come back on and talk about. This career from Montana guarding nukes to aerospace professor at the University of Texas, Austin. Thank you so much for spacing out with us today.
Thank you.